Cliff Gooding, Grateful Alcoholic.
Cliff.
My sobriety date is August the 15th of 2001. For that short amount of time, I'm really grateful. Welcome to Atlanta. It's wonderful to be here, isn't it? I knew this was going to be a great weekend because when we left my neighborhood on Tuesday, my neighbor came out and waved goodbye and used all five fingers. So I knew it was going to be a good, and I used all five waving back. So it was a pretty good, started out pretty good from our house. So, it's good to be here. It's good to be sober. It's good to be at AA's 80th birthday as we celebrate on a big party here in Atlanta. And I'm really grateful for everybody who came today. I'm always paused as I was coming down this morning as we were just walking down the hall and coming down the escalator of all the people that were taking pictures and had their phones out, their cell phones out, and were shooting videos of everybody walking in to this today. And I was thinking, I hope those people show up this morning, you know. And I gave a talk one time on Valentine's night, and I told the crowd, and it's much like I'm going to tell you all, I'm glad you're here. It's either you couldn't get a date or your sponsor made you come, so I'm really glad you're here. So I need to tell you a little bit about me. I just so you know, I deserve to be here, or have earned the right to be here, is that I'm from Oklahoma, and I have burned my life to the ground, and pretty much that would sum it up for what you need to know about me. I started drinking early, and I stayed late until it was all gone, and through a group of circumstances, no fault of my own, I found it necessary to achieve sobriety on June the 30th of 2001. I had been sober before, and I'd had like 5 years of dry time. They sent me to treatment, and I came back and did exactly what they told me to do, go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, but never took any of the actions as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to those meetings, and what happened is that I just sat in your chair, I drank your coffee, I chased your women around, and eventually there came a time when I got busy. Because I believe when we get here, Alcoholics Anonymous is real big. I'm so desperate when I get here. Alcoholics Anonymous is really big. And as I get here, if I'm not plugged into a spiritual program of recovery, what happens to a guy like me is that my Alcoholics Anonymous world shrinks, and my life outside of AA gets big. And what happened, that life outside of AA took me away from Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in Dallas, Texas, doing a really big deal, and somebody said, would you like a glass of wine with dinner? And it was the most natural thing I ever did. And I took that glass of wine, and over the next 8 years, I burned my life to the ground one more time and finally found my way back to you. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful to be sober today and grateful to be here. And, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor set me down. He gave me a book, and he opened it up, and he began to take me through the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he took me through the steps. And I began to take the actions indicated in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And by taking those actions, what happened is exactly what she talked about. She says, I had this awakening, you know. When I read the book of Alcoholics Anonymous today, it means something different to me today than when I first sat down and read it with my very first sponsor. It means something entirely different to me today because I'm more awake to that. More awake to what those words mean, more awake to what the principles have for me today because my experience is different. I'm further down the line today than I was the very first day when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm more awake because I've had that God consciousness, that still small voice that resonates inside of me. And by taking those actions in Alcoholics Anonymous, what's happened for me is coming through this and doing the things my sponsor has told me. One day I looked up on the wall and said, what are these things? He said, those are the traditions. And I found out when the traditions meetings were, and I'd skip those. And so, because I didn't think those applied to me. What I know today is the traditions are probably more as important to me today as the steps are. They certainly have been in my life. And I think this idea of anonymity, you know, initially when I got sober, I just wanted to tell everybody I was sober because most everybody knew I'd been drunk, you know. And the only thing that would have kept my getting sober or my bottom from being any less public would have been a 747 crash on the day I got sober. It was just not a good day, you know. So this idea of anonymity, this idea of spiritual foundation. You know, Bill in his writings on the step three in our book, he talks about the third step being the keystone of our sobriety, which we're going to build an arch that we're going to walk through as a free man. In his writings on the step on the tradition 12, he talks about anonymity being a spiritual foundation, a foundation which rests all the rest of our traditions. And reminding us that it's all the most important job we have here is to place principles before personalities. In Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, what I found is that we're full of personalities here. Absolutely full of personalities in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what, and what's important about that, all that is that working with anonymity and being anonymous, I had an opportunity to work the anonymity booth for yesterday for a couple of shifts. And it was great because I became the information traffic cop for people up there, you know. And not many people want to know about anonymity, but they want to know where registration was. And I was happy to help them. But there was one lady came by, and we finally figured out rather than just handing the buttons out, we'd make people work for the button. And so we started asking them questions. What does anonymity mean to you? You know, can you tell me how anonymity has impacted your life? Can you tell me what you're going to do to protect someone else's anonymity today? What are you going to do to protect your anonymity today? I just started asking them questions. There's this one little nice lady came by, and she had her daughter with her. No, her daughter was probably about 9 or 10 years old. And I asked this lady, you know, tell me about what you're going to do to protect your anonymity today. And she was telling me, and I was listening intently, and I looked down at her daughter, and her daughter was shaking her head, and I'm listening, and she stops. And I said, that sounds pretty good. And her daughter said, and if we see somebody famous here, I can't tell my friends at school. So there you go. You know, if our membership in Alcoholics Anonymous could appreciate the principle of anonymity like this little 10-year-old girl did yesterday, you know, it's great that everybody's here today, but really this room should be full. When we do topics here like let go, let God, those rooms will be packed. They'll be full. They'll be standing outside. But on the fundamental concepts of what keeps our fellowship together, what holds us together, this very spiritual foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I'm grateful for all of you who have come today. Don't get me wrong. And I'm grateful for those who come because we carry with us the most vital role in Alcoholics Anonymous to protect the very thing which has been given to us so freely. Recently, I was listening to a CD on some doctors talking, and they were talking about the disease concepts of alcoholism. And one of the doctors on this CD began to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and talked about how it was an outdated concept that we should only be talking about alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous, that it should be open for everybody, that we should have it open for all. And I was sitting there as I was listening to that and thinking about that CD, about the fundamental requirement of singleness of purpose and how important that is for us, singleness of purpose, and how a member of Alcoholics Anonymous could be so cavalier to say that, transcend today to talk about anonymity. Those same principles, those same guarded ideas that Bill first came up with spiritual anonymity. This idea that humility must always precede me on the walk. This idea that I must have principles first. Anonymity is ever more important to us as singleness of purpose. It is the safeguard of our fellowship. It would be easy for all of us. You know, one of the things I wanted before I came here, I had this hole, you know, we sometimes talk about, this hole inside of me. And all I ever wanted to do, I thought if I could just get this or that or it, you know, I would be okay. One of the things I did, if I could just be famous, you know, the biggest trick God ever played on me, I wanted to be famous and he made me anonymous. You know what I mean? You know, there'd be nothing more than most of us would like, would be get on TV and talk about how Alcoholics Anonymous has changed our life. Somewhere back in the recesses of my mind, I think that would be a great deal. My wife Lori, were at a deal for suicide prevention, and they give away, every year they honor like 2 or 3 people who have done something good for the community. And I remember about the 3rd year I'm there, I'm watching these people on video, and my mom begins to say, you know, I do good stuff in the community. I help a lot of people, but our principles of anonymity would all be washed away for one moment of my ego, my own selfishness, my self-centeredness, that which the steps were to minimize. If I allow myself to be placed in the public, then I've already diminished and taken away everything Bill wrote about everything the 1950s passed. I would be taken away and washed away. One of the most important things and treasured thing we have here is our anonymity. That which attracts others to us. That which has no need for me to promote. No need for me to be on television. No need for any of us to be on the newspaper. No need for any of that. Simple by my actions. Alcoholics, a society of alcoholics and acts. Only by my actions and the attractiveness of what we do here. My brokenness. Those who have seen me before and see me now is self-evident of the power of the power in Alcoholics Anonymous. That which God has done for me, which I could not do for myself. And upon these simple foundations of this spiritual foundation of humility and service, is that ever possible? I upon myself had no power at all to bring about change in my life. Me by myself have no power at all, you know. I wanted to be a good husband to all four of my wives. I lacked the power to do that. You know? I wanted to be a good son to my parents. I lacked the power to do that. I wanted to be a good employee, a good brother. I lacked the power to do that, you know. And step two got me in touch with this power where I came to believe that. And step three, when I turned my will and my life over to him, in chapter five, it tells us that there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. So if there's one who has all power, I'm powerless. And what happened? I got that power between me and the drink. And that power enabled me to be a good husband to my wife. Enabled me to be a good son to my parents. Enabled me to be a good employee, a good employer. That same power that brings us through the depths of hell prior to us coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. That same power that resonates in us, resonates us with us in these traditions. And it resonates us with my ego when I want to be out front. That spiritual concept of anonymity. That which says we must place principles ahead of my own wants, of my own needs. The principles of Alcoholics Anonymous must come before that. Before to do it otherwise would surely destroy the certain foundation that we have here. The very essence of the program of recovery which we Bill and Bob found the first 100 put together would surely be destroyed. Just like that doctor on that CD who talks about we should be open to everybody. That fundamental idea of singleness of purpose. The fundamental idea of spiritual foundation of this anonymity. This principle by which we all operate inside here and out there. What a great thing it is for all of us to come to Atlanta and all of us to be here and walk among the streets and be around the people of Atlanta for them to be a witness of what Alcoholics Anonymous has done. Because on any given day, 70,000 of us converging on a city could possibly cause it to be burned to the ground at any given time. You know, could be the second burning of Atlanta. That's all I'm saying, you know. Yet we come together in this spiritual oneness. We come together with a spiritual oneness that here we can make a difference in the lives of other people. We can only do that as long as we continue to remain anonymous. Let our friends recommend us. Let our pastors, our police officers, judges, let them recommend us to our fellowship. Let us remain anonymous so that when people come here, when they're struggling, you know, when they come here, they don't have any worry about, you know, one of the biggest things people worry about coming to Alcoholics Anonymous is who's going to know. Well, everybody knew in most of our cases, you know. But in the mind of alcoholic and the insanity, you know, in that world which we believe is reality for us, when we come here, you know, I don't want anybody to know. So how important for us is it to reassure them so that they know when they come here that their anonymity is protected, that their membership in this fellowship is absolutely guarded and trusted. And that when they come here and take a seat in our fellowship, that they know that they can come and be safe and protected and hear one message, one problem that's all problems, that's me, one answer that's all answer, that's God. And only is that possible if we continue to safeguard that which is so freely given to us. It's the only way that happens for people like us. You know, I'm really grateful today to be here. I'm going to read one thing. I hate to be read to, so I'm going to read to y'all. So just a couple things, because I think they're so important in Bill's writing. I just really think they're important, and I just want to leave you with this before I let the other speakers come here. So, this is from AA Comes of Age. It says, in my belief, the entire future of our fellowship hangs upon this vital principle. If we continue to be filled with the spirit of practice of anonymity, no shoal or reef can wreck us. If we forget this principle, the lid of Pandora's box will be off and the spirits of money, power, and prestige will be loosed among us. I am positive that AA's anonymity is the key to long-term survival. And then Bill wrote in the Grapevine in 1960 in the article Freedom Under God, The Choice is Ours, a vast communication net now covers the earth. And how true is that today? How prophetic was Bill's writing in 1960 about a vast communication net surrounding us with social media? Even in its remotest reaches, granting all its huge public benefits, this limitless world forum is nevertheless a hunting ground for all those who would seek money, acclaim, and power at the expense of society in general. Therefore, nothing can matter more to the future welfare of AA than the manner in which we use this colossus of communication. Used unselfishly and well, the results can surpass our present imagination. Should we handle this great instrument badly, we shall be shattered by the ego. Demands of our own people, often with the best of intentions on their part. Against all this, the sacrificial spirit of AA's anonymity at the top public level is literally our shield and our buckler. Here again, we must be confident that love of AA and of God will always carry the day. You know, as we spend this time together, as we fellowship and we hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, as we hear people share the message throughout the weekend, be mindful. Be mindful of the gift that's been so freely given to us. We are the guardians of our traditions. You know, it's so easy to pass it off as I'll let somebody else worry about it. I'll let somebody else do it. We sometimes, I believe, become so concerned that I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings at the expense of our ship that has come and saved our lives. You know, when I got sober, my sponsors had one thing in common. They were all anti-Cliff, every one of them. But I need to be pro-traditions. And I need to be vigilant. And you need to be vigilant to protect the very foundation of which our program rests, on what for which the hope for tomorrow comes. I am not clueless to the fact that this very morning, within a 5-mile radius of where we sit right now, there are people coming to, wondering, how did this happen to me once again? How did this happen to me once again? And I'm also sure that this morning when they came to, they said, I swear I'm never doing this again. I swear to God, get the Bible out, gather the kids around, somebody lay hands on me, I'm never doing this again. I'm also confident and assured that this afternoon by about 3 or 4 o'clock, those same people who woke up this morning assured in the depths of hell with the four horsemen around their bed, I'm assured today that about 3 or 4 o'clock, those same people will change their mind. Will change their mind because they lack the power of choice and they don't know the message. They have not heard the good news. And if we don't continue to be vigilant, there may not be a place for those people to come. There may not be a place for those people to come. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Cliff. There was one thing he said that I wanted to comment on. He said he doesn't like to read things that are written. He doesn't like people reading to him. Well, I don't know about him, but at my age, I have to write things down and read them because I can't remember most of them anymore. Comes with age, folks. Comes with age. So our next speaker is Elaine H. She hails from the northern border. She's from Oakville, Ontario, with 21 years of sobriety. and she is currently the public information chair for Area 60, excuse me, 83. Let's welcome Elaine.
Thank you, Nancy. Good morning, friends.
Good morning.
I am a very grateful alcoholic, a member of the Streetsville Group in District 6 of Area 83, Eastern Ontario International, and my name is Elaine.
Hi, Elaine.
And I say I'm grateful today, not because I'm an alcoholic, necessarily, but I am so grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that was here. I am grateful for the principle of anonymity that was practiced by those who went before me. I am grateful for the life that has been given to me through Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why I say I am a grateful alcoholic. I came to this program late in life. Nancy said 21 years, but this will attest to the fact that it was late in life. When I came through the doors, like most of us, I was pretty broken. I hadn't lost the stuff yet. You know, the house, the job, the car, the dog. But I'd lost myself. I came with that same hole in my soul that so many of us can identify with and that Cliff talked about. When I came through the doors to my first meeting, I wasn't thinking about anonymity. I didn't even know what anonymity was. I just knew I was dying. I was dying. And you were reaching out a hand of love and of hope, and I was just grasping that. I was grasping it. Some in this room know I've heard about my first meeting. And I walked in. And I didn't know you. I didn't know anyone. I got myself there by myself. Yeah, it was Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'd seen this little thing, this little ad in the local paper. If you want to drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's ours. And here's our number. That's how I got there. And I walked in. I still remember the person who gave me my first hug. There were three anniversaries being celebrated that night. I shared the celebration with two of those just a week ago. I remember who spoke. I remember who chaired. But most of all, it was that love and that hope. I didn't know what anonymity was. All I knew was that you kept saying, keep coming back. Keep coming back. If you do what we did, you'll get what we got. And so that's what I did. The traditions, they were that 12 of those things up on the wall. I didn't know what they meant. I didn't know what any of you were saying or talking about. I didn't understand it, you know. Hang on by letting go, and to keep it, you got to give it away. Now that meant anything, but you said, keep coming back. Keep coming back. And so I did. I did. My first experience with anonymity, I was probably 2 or 3 months sober, and I walked into a meeting and I recognized somebody. And I said, oh, my God, what do I do now? What do I do now? They'll talk. They'll talk. But my sponsor knew, could see what was going on. And she said, that person is here for the same reason that you are. He's not going to share your anonymity. Remember our name, Elaine. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. He's not going to share your identity, just like you're not going to share his. A couple of years later, I was going to my first convention, small size of this convention, but it was about 2,500 people, and it was in a downtown Toronto hotel. And I said, I can't go. That's right close to my office, my place of employment. I can't go. Somebody there might see me, might see me. Thank goodness for the long-timers who said, what makes you think? What makes you think those people are going to come to a convention of Alcoholics Anonymous to see if you're there? It's not about me. But it felt it at the time. That's anonymity at the personal level. That's our safety. That's our safety. And thank God for it. Because I wouldn't have stayed if I hadn't felt safe. It is so important for us to preserve that for the newcomer. Like I was, like you were, coming through the door shaking. I have sponsees. I had to sit them down and say, yes, you may see people you know, but they're here for the same reason. They're here for help. Then I got into service, and those traditions started taking on a little bit more meaning, and my service sponsor took me through them and made me apply them to my what I was doing, and the key ones for me, 11 and 12, you know. Just anonymity, protecting our anonymity. It's a spiritual foundation, as Cliff has said. Spiritual foundation of all. We talk about anonymity being, a treasured possession. Oh, my God, it's a treasured possession for me today. So I learned more about the traditions. But at the public level, I heard the anonymity statement. I heard it. What did it mean? Not a lot. The humility, I got it. And I got it. 2005 convention in Toronto. I was working with someone else who's in this room today. We were coordinating volunteers for meetings like this. In the back room, 60% of our people didn't show up. I was talking to my service sponsor at the end of Saturday, and I was bitching and complaining about all these friggin' volunteers who didn't show up. And it made my job so hard. And he stopped me, and I don't know if any of you were at that convention, but there was a walkway that overlooked huge room like out here. And he said, do you see those people? I said, of course I've been seeing those people all day. He said, do you see those people? Do you really see those people? I didn't know what he was getting at. He said, you are doing that for them, not you. That was first real lesson in humility for me. We are not secret. We're not secret. We can't be secret because no one would know where to come. This convention, you know, it's all over the city of Atlanta, the posters. It's been on our website. It's a public website. You know, we want people to know. Alcoholics Anonymous wants people to know there are 60,000-plus people, formerly hopeless alcoholics, celebrating happy, joyous, and free 80 years of hope and recovery for people. We want people to know that. We want to carry that message. But that's a message about Alcoholics Anonymous, not about me, not about you. It's about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anonymity at the public level. You know, we were talking, four of us drove down together, and we were talking about this because I didn't get it. You know, I didn't get it what this day was all about, or this topic was about. They said, so what about we weren't anonymous at the public level? We were coming to the convention. There'd be a red carpet. There'd be a red carpet so people with long time sobriety could walk the red carpet. Walk the red carpet. And all the press on the red carpet. The speakers, they would have put in bids to speak. Bids to speak. Wouldn't have been me. Bids to speak. But the newcomer out there, would they come? Would they feel safe? No. No, they wouldn't feel safe. I don't know how many of you have seen this poster, and it was on the cover of Box 459, the early one, this year. Anonymity is so fragile, you can break it with one finger. Cliff read Bill's writing from November 1960, Grapevine. In it, he was talking about television as this huge communication web. Today, just in the 5 years since the San Antonio Convention, our manner of communicating with each other has changed immensely. It's changed immensely. With one finger, I or you or they or anyone can break their own anonymity, can break my anonymity. Anonymity and the convention, I get it. And so I started thinking about it and saying, yeah, it wasn't too long ago, that someone in PI, and who knows better, but not recognizing the impact that one post on Facebook, what impact that can have. It's like a pebble in a pond. You don't know where the ripples are going to stop. You don't know where they're going to stop. This particular post was to members of a secret group. She posted it looking for speakers for an AA event. She thought it was only going to members of a secret group. I'm not a member of that group. I'm not a member of that group. I happen to be a friend of someone else in that group. I got tagged. And I don't know where it went from there. You know, I'm on Facebook in a very limited way. I'm basically there so I can find out what my grandkids in Seattle are doing. You know, I don't have a lot of friends. I don't accept a lot of friend requests. But that was just an example to me. How careful we have to be. I was sharing with someone else yesterday, and she shared an experience with me. Somebody was at an anniversary, and a picture was taken. And somebody posted that picture, and she was in it. And it went to somebody else, and it went to somebody else. And out there, how many ripples in the pond? This person was up for a promotion. His boss saw it. He didn't get the promotion. Whether the fact that he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous or not, doesn't know. But that's the impact it can have. Someone else. Something posted, got out there, insurance broker saw it. Not allowed to do this, but did it. It's rate sword. We do not know when we click our finger where it's going to go. There were literally, I am sure, thousands of pictures and messages and posts on Facebook, Twitter, in the last 24, 48 hours. Do you know where they went? Do you know who saw them? I'm on Facebook. I won't post a picture. I won't post a message. I haven't told anybody I'm in Atlanta. Because I don't know if someone sees it and says, what's Elaine doing in Atlanta? And somebody's going to say, oh, she's at the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen for me. I don't want it to happen for you. So when we talk about anonymity at the convention, I get it. I get it. I am so very grateful, as I said at the start, for the principle of anonymity that protects me and protects you. One other experience. I was elected PI chair in my area in January of this year. I'd never been really actively involved in PI, but I sort of knew what it's about. It's carrying the message. And I knew about we protect our anonymity, the level of press, radio and film, and the internet and social network, and. It's about 10 days in, and I had a request for a television interview. First of all, I freaked because... And then I said, well, it's really commenting on an outside issue, so we don't do that. But I called Jim M. and GSO, the staff on the public information desk, and I said, I need some help here because this person is persistent. Now he's changing it from talking about that to sharing my personal experience on recovery. And I said, I'm just a bit of a skeptic. I think it might get twisted. And so Jim spoke to the individual and communicated to, and I declined the interview. That television reporter went on his own Facebook page, said, I am looking for, guess what? Somebody put up their hand and broke their anonymity. You know? That's why we're talking about humility, you know, protecting us from ourselves, from that, you know, inclination for personal recognition and gain. That's why that principle of anonymity is there. As I said, I'm going to be very careful. My finger is keeping in my pockets this weekend, you know. And I ask all of you to think before you click. You may not break your anonymity, but you might break someone else's or inadvertently break your own. We must preserve the principle of anonymity. If Alcoholics Anonymous is to be around as it was for us, I am a very grateful alcoholic. My name's Elaine.
Thank you, Elaine. And our last speaker, well, actually, I have a special announcement about our next speaker. Something very special happened to him yesterday. He has a love for Alcoholics Anonymous, and he also has his love with him, and they got married yesterday in Atlanta. So I know he's going to have some very special words to say today. It's that emotional sobriety thing kicking in already, huh? And he has 20 years of sobriety. He hails from New York. Let's give Tom a hand.
Hi, everybody. My name's Tom T. I'm an alcoholic. So we might as well start by breaking my wife Cheryl's anonymity. Hi, honey. So Cliff just told me, don't screw this up. You know, it's great. They ask you to speak a couple of months in advance, and I got to tell you, I've given some great talks in my head over the last couple of months on anonymity, none of which will come out today, but we'll see what happens. We've had two wonderful speakers already. They pretty much mentioned everything I had going on in my head, so it should be fun. We'll see what comes out. My name is Tom, and I'm an alcoholic, and my sober date is April 8th, 1995, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And the little nervousness I get in my stomach and my chest before I speak at an AA meeting is because I know I will always sell this fellowship and this program short, and I will never be able to express in words what this program and you folks have done for me over this last 20 years. We talk about broken. I think we sell ourselves short. This program has us do things that are in contrary to everything we stand for our whole lives, and then we find out that we were wrong our whole lives, right? And there is a much better way to do things, and I found that here. I often refer to Alcoholics Anonymous as our unfair advantage. I just don't know how the normal folks do it without it. I really don't. How do you perform on a level as an adult without a sponsor? I don't get it, you know. I need supervision. Actually, my best man yesterday said we're very grateful to Cheryl because now we know he has lifelong supervision, and I get that, you know. I've always been kind of wired wrong. There's just something been wrong with me from a very, very early age, way before alcohol came on the picture. And, you know, if I was a house, you'd push the doorbell and the toilet would flush. It just doesn't work right. And so I'm grateful for the folks that were here before I got here. And that's when we talk about our traditions and anonymity. You really can't say enough about it, because for anyone here with any more time than me that was here when I got here, thank you. Thank you for giving me AA the way that it was when I walked in. And it is my job, and I will do it till the day I die, hopefully with God's help, to turn that over to a new person the same way we got it. And there's a lot of strong winds blowing out there today. We talked about all the social media stuff and all. I was going to kid around and come up with an iPhone, take a picture of you all, and say, it's just for Facebook, don't worry. You know, we learn by our mistakes, right? And, but I chose not to do that after this qualification. But it's so true. People don't realize, you know, each member has, they can cloak themselves with the amount of anonymity that they want to. Now, myself, I had some experiences at work just before leaving here. People were asking me, why are you getting married in Atlanta? And it was in the business world. And I said, because I'm going to the 80th Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if I don't, I'd probably kill half of you. So that's why, and they accept the fact that I'm an AA member at my job. So it's okay, but that's my choice. That's my choice, and each of us have that choice. But when it comes to us as a whole, we have a greater responsibility. Because anonymity and being anonymous, you know, I looked it up. We did some readings before we got here. I'm sure we all did. And, you know, it's either to be nameless, or the one that I liked was to be without distinction. You know, I always wanted to stand out. I always wanted to be noticed. I always wanted to be loved by my parents and all that stuff that I strived for my whole life. And I come here and you folks teach me, just be one of the herd. Just do what we do. Just we would. And your life takes off. When you put that personal glory behind you and just do the next right thing and help that next person that comes in the door, doors open for you that you could never open with your shoulder by pushing all your weight against it. And all you have to do is become a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And where else can you find an organization that can reproduce on a mass level a spiritual experience sufficient to overcome alcoholism. It is an amazing, amazing thing we've been given. There are so many times where I just stop, and I'm just, thank you, God. In the middle of the day, I just look up and say, my God, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Because for a guy like me, there's nowhere else. It's either death or institutions or AA. And I have a lot of fun here with you folks. And I will do anything to protect that. And so when I first went through the 12 steps with my sponsor, I became an expert on them very quickly. So I had to move on to the traditions. So I fired that sponsor, and I got a service sponsor who took me through the 12 traditions. And he was able to put it into personal experience because he had been around for a while and shown me how on Staten Island in the individual group some of the traditions came into play, and I remember some of the stories. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And he, too, told me that our traditions protect us from ourselves. The steps will protect us from alcohol, and then the traditions will protect us from ourselves. And then the concepts will protect us from the world. And I had such a wonderful experience with that guy that he became my sponsor. He's been my sponsor for the last 18 years. And we were kidding before when I introduced myself up here that, you know, when you have a sponsor like mine, you're just forced into the service structure. And thank God that I was. So after a year sober, I've been in GSR and intergroup nonstop. And that's a real exercise in patience and tolerance for those of you who have gone. It's like a business meeting on steroids, some of those talks that you go through for 2 hours for absolutely nonsense that we have no power over. It's just great. But you learn a lot, and you learn about why it's like that, so we don't radically change things so quick. This is perfect. This is perfect. We can tweak it here and there, but the principles are perfect. It's only my flawed personality that we got a problem with. Believe me, I used to think it was about everybody else's personality. Let me rise on the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous about over your flawed personalities, and I'll get through this. No, that's about my personality, and I have to push it out of the way for the better of AA. Because Alcoholics Anonymous has to be here for the folks that come after us. It has to be here for us now. But that newcomer, when he walks in, they have to know, and they have to be shown. And it is our job to tell them about our traditions and about why we don't blow things up on Facebook and on Twitter and all the social media that's out there. I see it all the time. I mean, some of the kids are very funny with some of this. I'm on because my son was in the service, and we like to keep tabs on them. But I see some of the very funny stuff they post, but it's also very hurtful to certain people. And you don't want to give anybody a reason not to love us because this door's always got to be open, and it's always got to be ready. My sponsor tells me when you do the greeting commitment at your home group, you make sure it's somebody's first meeting because it probably is. And that's the way we do it at Decker Avenue Step on Staten Island. We make sure that every home newcomer that walks through that door is greeted friendly, gets a cup of coffee, sits down. We give them a free book. We talk to them. We take their number. We call them. It's important. We have to do this thing. I mean, if you have been given the life that I've been given here, how could you not? How could you not? How could you not come off your prayer and meditation in 10-11 and not awaken with an awakened spirit and go out there and just want to shake somebody and give them this thing? It's just so great. You know, William James in Religious Experiences talks a little bit about the once born and the twice born. He categorizes all people in just two little categories, which I think is an amazing thing. But the once born, he says, they're biologically predisposed to a happiness and a sense of just being, well-being, and the world is right, and everything is just fine. And then there's the twice-born, who just have a disconnect and a disunity and a disease and a pending doom that is coming, and they just can't seem to overcome that until there is some crisis in their life, which we've all experienced in our bottom. And then he said, and then they will have, I think he calls it a mystical experience, and that's our spiritual experience. And he says that the greatest thing, many people would think that the firstborn, the once-born, was the happiest people on earth. He said, oh, no, it's the twice-born, because they've known the other side. They don't know that's what life was like. And they come back to that with such a zest and such a fervor that they have to go out there and help others. And I look at this room and I look at this convention. I mean, you can't walk down the street here without feeling it. If you do, really pinch yourself. Something's going on. Maybe you got a neurological disorder going on or something. But, I mean, we got off the elevator last night, and two gentlemen from Japan didn't have their badges yet. And he flipped my badge and he said, me too. I said, this is just great. And we've just been walking around town having a wonderful time and enjoying the company and everything. And it's so, so important that we take care of what we have here and we treat it with respect and love and kindness and make sure that it's there for the next folks. On personal levels, you know, it's funny. A lot of people will just not. In our home group, we do say our full names because, you know, we've had some members go to the hospital and it's a little tough to find what room is Janet from another planet in. And, you know, so we kind of do that little bit. Yeah, you know, is Wall Street Bob okay? You know, so we do those little things and it's all good on the personal level. But our biggest challenge now is the social media and the younger and younger membership coming. You know, we're here on our 80th birthday. Can you imagine if it was up to one of our younger members to start Alcoholics Anonymous now? I mean, put one of these kids in that's in your home group. You know the ones with the sideways back baseball hat. Probably about 30 living at home. And but they come in with an iPhone and nice sneakers, right? Rough bottom. All right? They all got that, right? It's not the way we came in when we came in, right, Cliff? But imagine if they were in a hotel and they heard some chatter from the gay bar inside. They would probably go on that iPhone. They'd hit their contact list. They'd send a text out to everybody. They'd wait about 15 seconds, and then they'd go in the bar. We wouldn't be here today, right? Bill sat there with the nickels, kept going. Imagine the kids having to do this today. Forget it. With the phone, they'd be out there. So thank God for everything that came with Alcoholics Anonymous, our history. You know, if you stay around here a little bit more, you're drawn to that history, and it's just more and more magical how many things happened at the right time, at the right place, the phone that got picked up, the person that drove here, the person that did that. It is just an incredible, incredible thing. And, yeah, there are no coincidences. I think Einstein said anonymity is God's way of being. Oh, no, coincidence is God's way of being anonymous. And how true is that when we look at our history and all the things that came up? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it was an honor to be up here today and to be at this convention. I'm very glad to get this out of the way at 9 o'clock in the morning so I can enjoy the rest of the weekend. My friend Jimmy's on at 11. Good luck, Jim. Don't screw it up.
There you go.
And, you know, I think one of the best ways we could leave is the way that Dr. Bob addressed the convention in 50. Because not much has changed in my mind. You know, we need to keep this thing simple and not louse it up with all Freudian complexes for the scientific mind because it's all about love and service, and Dr. Bob said. And we know what love is and we know what service is. And then he gave us a little warning to guard against the erring member, the tongue, you know, how we gossip in AA, and temper that with kindness and love and understanding. They're fellow sufferers, you know. And then he told us he guarded against complacency. And don't be so smug and complacent that we forget about the newcomer and pat him on the back and take him to a couple of meetings. Because this is our Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's up to us to protect it. Thank you very much. I love you guys. Thank you.
Oh. Are you okay?
Thank you.
He said he had a rough time with that first step. Thank you, Tom. Thank you for all of the contributions that you all have made today. It's been very enlightening for me, and let's give them all a round of applause.